Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome into Brewcast for Mason Brew on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am Luke Giardi, joined by Steven Ossentoski here with you on Monday night, October 18th, as we head into Tuesday, October 19th. Coming off the bye week, a little stress-free Saturday. For the Wolverines fans out there, and hopefully a stress-free Saturday coming up here this week. We'll see. But we got some football to get to. We've got some basketball to get to as well with the AP poll dropping here today for the preseason. But before we get into all that, Steven, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Doing well. Just got back from Chicago, pulled into the driveway about 15 minutes ago. So ain't no rest for the wicked, man. It was a
wow.
Yeah, it was a fun weekend. Wedding there for a friend in Chicago. So saw a lot of people for first time in forever. Partied for the first time in forever, what it feels like. And yeah, man, it was nice to do something other than football. You know, I fall in love with my football Saturdays, but the bye week's a good time. Sometimes I'll do like Halloween weekends. It'll be a fun break. This time was a wedding, so it was a good weekend. It was fun. I'm ready to get back in the swing of things and, you know, get nervous for a game on Saturday. So
go through a couple of shirts or what?
At least a few.
Even for Northwestern.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, man. My body doesn't know. My body never knows. It's just like, oh, it's a game. Let's do it. Sweat through it.
But, man.
What were you up to this weekend? Did you
I took in a little college football, but up here, man, battle for the Miners Cup, Northern Michigan versus Michigan Tech at the Dome. So went to that, saw a great little D2 action game. You know, wasn't the one that everyone's eyes were on in the GLIAC with Ferris and Grand Valley playing on Saturday night, but still, sure. Yeah, was able to get a little stress-free college football action in, which I truly do enjoy every once in a while.
Nice. Nice. That's a fun little spot. Was it at Northern Michigan or at Michigan Tech?
Yep. Yeah, it was at Northern, so it was at the Superior Dome.
Yeah.
Always good to go watch a game there.
That's a fun time. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Man. So, it was still kind of a crazy college football Saturday, though. We'll kick it off right here with Dylan Girk asking, so you think Iowa dropping one helps or hurts Michigan? At the end of the day, I don't think it really matters, to be quite honest with you, because, look, if you meet up with Iowa in the Big Ten championship game, that means you've got a chance to win the Big Ten. I mean, unless you expect Michigan to be a two-loss team getting to Indy, which I don't really foresee happening. I know there's probably a possibility in there with the way the schedule works out with everyone, but end of the day, if Michigan has one loss or no losses and they end up winning the Big Ten championship, they're a college football playoff team.
Yeah, the thing, it might help because if Michigan does get to Indianapolis for the Big Ten championship game, that likely means they took out Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State. There are scenarios in which that isn't the case, right? Michigan maybe drops one of those games and can still make it if something crazy happens. But going with the scenario that Michigan wins out and meets Iowa in Indy, if Iowa were an undefeated team at that point, you could potentially have a play-in game there if you had two undefeated Big Ten teams from each division meeting there. Now, with Iowa losing, that gives a lot more breathing room in that scenario for Michigan, because then you would have wins over, right now, three top 10 teams from the Big Ten East, and Iowa, you know, not really having all that much. Their win over Penn State, I think, would be the only ranked win. Add in the bad loss to Purdue this weekend, and their resume isn't looking anywhere near Michigan. So even if Michigan would lose in Indianapolis and Iowa wins the Big Ten, I think Michigan still would have a much better resume than Iowa in that scenario. So again, there's a lot of football to be played, but if you're looking strictly at on paper, if they meet in Indianapolis, this loss, I think, does help Michigan. I don't think it helps the Big Ten, because Iowa was always kind of a, like, they're number two. I think everyone was just like waiting for that ball to drop, right? Like, this just isn't going to happen. Iowa isn't this number two team in the country. And they got caught and they looked bad, man. Four picks for Petras. Like, that was.
What is it about Purdue? Just like once every couple of years, they just go out and whoop someone.
I saw a tweet on it, and it's kind of, it's not a bad tweet. It's
the Miami Hurricanes tweet.
No. It was like, have Purdue play in front of sick kids and they're just going to win, like, against anybody, like, right? Iowa, they have the win for the kids.
Someone tweeted that. It said, Purdue when they play in front of sick kids, and then they put the team photo of the 2001 Miami Hurricanes.
Oh, is that it? Okay, so there's multiple variations of that same thing. Yeah. We saw different ones, but man, I mean, you're right. They beat the brakes off of OSU in the Tyler Trent game, which was like one of the more memorable games I can remember the past, you know, decade, probably, is just insane. And then, yeah, they just make Iowa look extremely pedestrian. So yeah, man, I mean, Brohm just pulls one out once every 3 years, and it's just, it's fun to watch, but then you're just like, man, how good are any of these teams? And I feel like we can talk about a lot of these other games this week where it's just like, what happened? I thought Nebraska was good. I thought Rutgers was pulling some things together. Wisconsin, you know, Army is Army, but it's like, still, it's just like, I have no idea anymore, like, who is good in this conference. It's pretty puzzling at this point.
Yeah. By the way, Wisconsin Army, your annual reminder to not schedule Service Academy teams on your schedule.
Yeah. Never.
But yeah, to your point, man, how about just Northwestern getting the victory over Rutgers? Like, no way did I see that coming after the shellacking Nebraska gave them the week before, just how bad Nebraska's looked this year.
I mean, they have been, this has been like the worst Northwestern team under Pat Fitzgerald in a long time. And I think watching Rutgers throughout the season, it was like, yeah, they are a competent football team on the rise here. And then, yeah, they just drop a dud, losing by 14 to Northwestern. And it's just like, I have no idea, because it's one of those things where I thought they were a good test for Michigan's defense overall with Vedras, you know, running quarterback, and Northwestern didn't really have a problem. And it's just so puzzling this year overall, because Nebraska loses to Minnesota, and Minnesota, I feel like I haven't thought about Minnesota at all this entire season. I mean, they're 4-2 right now. They're wins are over Miami of Ohio by 5, which was like, okay, like, yeah, sure. And then a 30-0 win over Colorado. Colorado's a bad team. They lost to Bowling Green, and then they beat Purdue and Nebraska. It's like, what is going on? Like, I don't understand.
And we just thought that Nebraska was about to turn a corner.
Yeah, they looked like against both Michigan State and Michigan, they played like a top 25 very competent team. Like, they were making mistakes, but they had a very interesting offense, really great quarterback. And it was just like, I have no idea what to make of any teams right now. And especially because all of Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, and Michigan State, none of those teams have played against each other yet. Like, it's just going to be an onslaught in the second half of this schedule. And as you see all these other dominoes falling of like, yeah, it's not the like Wisconsin of old, but they're still relatively decent. And they're like, just every game is a touchdown game for them. And then all of these other games we're talking about, it's just like, it's either a meat grinder where no one's good, or like, it's just another season where it, I mean, we didn't learn a whole lot last year in some regards, where it's like, how much is that? Like, how much can you throw that out? Because both Michigan and Michigan State are undefeated. Who would have predicted that? Mm-hmm. And I feel like I just can't make predictions anymore, because from one week to the next, it's like nothing applies. It's like, I thought Nebraska was like, had a chance to still be a contender in the Big Ten West. And now I'm of the mindset that like, Scott Frost might be gone. Like,
yeah,
like he might be, like, that's not a game you can lose. And yeah, man, there's just so much chaos. And now I have to like pay attention to Northwestern and like actually look at them, because it's like, what did they do against Nebraska here?
Well, and I think that brings us to this from QED. He said, if you're Jim Harbaugh, do you do any extensive prep for Northwestern, or do you set all eyes on the MSU game? And I think unequivocally, you can't overlook anyone in the Big Ten. You know, obviously, look, there are little things I think you can do throughout the year. Like if you set aside a different portion of practice, like every day for Ohio State, like I get that. That's fine because it's part of your routine. But you absolutely, if you're the team, you are looking at Northwestern and only Northwestern right now. Like maybe they did a little bit of scouting during the bye week on Michigan State. I wouldn't be surprised if they did that, the coaching staff. But from a team perspective, you're all in on the game plan against Northwestern. You're taking this one game at a time. Like we don't have to do that because right. We have zero impact on the game. But the team is absolutely going to be laser focused on the next opponent.
Yeah, and I do think that's something that is – I don't want to say a little bit overstated, but I think it's kind of, I don't know what the right term is for what I'm about to describe here. I think it's probably inaccurate. I think it's almost surely inaccurate, the amount that people think the bye week is spent on specific opponents. If I'm a coaching staff, I think the bye week is a perfect opportunity to do a very extensive self-scout on yourself. Mm. How are teams looking at my film? Almost like Men in Black myself, right? With the sensor, just erase my memory, go back, watch my film from the first six games of the season. What are teams learning from that? And how are they going to scheme based off of that information? Almost be a student of yourself, pretend like you're prepping for your own team, like going against your own team, and what are opposing coaches going to learn from that? And what are tendencies you have to break that you've now put on film? And that's something where like, if you can appropriately do that, spend a lot of time that week building counters to your tendencies to the team that you are at that point, and having those counters queued up and, you know, maybe a separate branch of your offense, different areas on defense that you can kind of throw a change up there, that's going to benefit you in all of the games throughout the season, rather than just dedicating time specifically for Ohio State, specifically Michigan State, because doing that approach of that extensive self-scout, you don't have time to do that, because mm-hmm. exactly what I can't pronounce the name, but the question you just showed here, you can't really prep for like you need to be prepping for each team on your schedule. And if you're focusing on a team in the future, things like that, what you do in that self-scouting week is going to help you regardless of who the opponent is what I'm trying to get at. So, I think it is something where, of course, you're going to, I think, put certain bodies always looking towards those top competitions, especially ones against rivals. You know, I've been a main push person. I don't know what the word is. I've been a big supporter of the conspiracy theory that Ohio State spends a lot more time prepping for teams that are very successful and have more importance, like Michigan. I think they've been able to get away with doing that because of the talent that they right. can get by against other teams. But I think Michigan in general under Harbaugh doesn't really do that. I think he probably takes a more NFL approach where you just need to spend an equal amount of time each week. So yeah, long answer. The short version of that answer is I doubt there's any less prep for Northwestern given the bye week. I think the bye week allows you to get a little bit healthier, self-scout, and make more adjustments that will help you over the second half of the season. And it's a really well-timed bye week for that as well.
Yes. Yeah, because I like the idea of not going into the Michigan State game off a bye. I like having, yeah. And it's not necessarily a juggernaut of an opponent that you have to play prior to that. So you can, I think to your point here, Steven, is that they can do some things. They can try and figure it out. If they did do, you know, a lot of the self-scouting like you're talking about, is throw some counters out there and see how it works against a team like Nebraska. And not really, you know, your win probability is probably going to stay above 80% for the entirety of the game.
Right. Yeah. And Dylan Girk had a good point. He said it kind of sucks State gets a bye week right before they play us, but I'm hoping we hit Northwestern early and get starters out quick, like momentum coming out of the week. Yeah. And I do get that because especially for a team like Michigan State, there is more focus on Michigan than anyone else on their schedule. Like that's just the fact of it. And right. When you consider recruiting implications, 2 years in a row, that will resonate a lot with recruits. If you're Tucker, if he's looking to stick around for a while, then that's the kind of momentum you need. So there is some truth to that where State's bye week does benefit them a lot to have more specific prep time for Michigan than Michigan may have for State. But kind of going what you're saying, I kind of like having this opponent here where Michigan shouldn't struggle, but anything that they do try from their self-scouting bye week, anything that, you know, they can kind of use it hopefully as a tune-up, get a lot of their backup, some starting experience, things like that. You know, like second half, you can almost run them out there to start the second half, hopefully, if that's how the game does go against Northwestern. But there's a lot of opportunities that having an easier opponent can be more beneficial than the bye week. You could come out of that bye week pretty cold. You haven't played.
Right.
You know, and you think about, I mean, now I'm getting like super weird about it, but think of like the weather. If it's like, you know, a middle of September, like earlier October, and then you get into late October, could be a totally different feel to that game. And you haven't played in 2 weeks and you come out cold. That's a conceivable situation as well. So there's a lot of small things about it that I think could go either way. But the big brother here commented, I'm glad the MSU game is at noon. This is something where I want to get your take on it too. As a fan, I love it because yeah. I've talked extensively on this podcast about just my shirt sweating, just grossness. And I'm that throughout the entire day until the game is over. So I'm thankful for that front. I think it's a big miss for the Big Ten though, man. This is the biggest, I mean, I get it. Cause you have Ohio State, Penn State that same day.
Yep.
This could be the biggest Michigan, Michigan State game in program history. Like, I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. I can't think of a game that has higher stakes for both of those teams in quite some time. Am I crazy for saying that this is the biggest game in the rivalry's history at this point?
Right now, off the top of my head, I think you're right. I'm trying to think back to 2015. I think both were undefeated in the Big Ten going into that game that year. Michigan did already have the one loss to Utah, though. Michigan State was undefeated coming in. I don't know if they've ever met this late while being undefeated. I don't know if they've ever met as undefeated opponents, regardless of when they've played.
Yeah, it's at least like that 2015 game is the only one that really stands out where it's like that winner is really well positioned moving forward. Right. But yeah, I can't think of the last time both teams were like, you know, truly undefeated. And I mean, they could be probably not both top five teams because where's Michigan State at right now? I think they're at like number nine. They're not going to move up to top five, but it's for sure top 10 if Michigan can, you know, hold on next week, knock on wood against Pat Fitzgerald and Northwestern. But yeah, I can't remember last time it was undefeated and top 10. I bet it's the first time in both in program history that will be the case. So
I understand. You know, this was obviously a pretty big topic here today when the game got announced for noon. I understand what Fox is doing, obviously, because they want the big noon kickoff. These are the type of games they envisioned when they got the Big Ten rights and they decided to do the big noon kickoff. I will say, I for particularly for Michigan State fans and really the students over there, it kind of sucks. Noon kickoffs are not great on a big game, especially if you're trying to get that atmosphere built up. You're trying to tailgate a little bit. I personally am not a huge fan of the night games. I think 3:30 would have been a sweet spot for them. For me, love noon. Love noon for this game, especially on the road at Michigan State. 3:30, though, I feel like that's kind of the traditional Michigan State matchup too. Is I think back to the Braylon Edwards game, 2004, 2005, whichever one it was. The big comeback game. That was kind of that October feel. It starts, there's light, and by the end of the game, it's dark, and you're playing kind of under the lights, man. That's kind of what Michigan State's always felt like, but. The noon kickoff, I don't mind. I think it would have been silly to have it at 7 or 7:30. I'm not a big fan of that, particularly as we move to the back half of October. Like, there's a reason the Big Ten needs both teams to agree to play night games in November. Like, we're getting there, to that point. I understand the night game is the showcase and everything like that. I think 3:30 would have been good. I wouldn't have liked to see it as a night game, and I'd be surprised if Michigan State fans would have as well.
Yeah. I want to call out Venice Blue Dev, who says now fans are overlooking Western, I'm assuming Northwestern, already talking MSU. This is the biggest thing I like see on Twitter and like people just saying overall. What does that mean? It means nothing. I can talk about Ohio State every week. Sure, it's annoying. It's not going to affect anything. If the players for Michigan are paying enough attention on Twitter to have the general level of discourse on a future opponent, if they're paying that close attention to where it's affecting their mental ability to focus on Northwestern instead of Northwestern focusing on Michigan State, Ohio State, that team's already going to lose if the players are paying that close attention. So I can talk about Central Michigan and send off a million tweets about Central Michigan, and it'll have no effect on anything. I can talk about Iowa. I can talk about Indianapolis. Nothing's going to change how this team is playing.
It's such a pet peeve of mine, man.
Oh, it's like unbelievable.
We have no impact on the game.
I see it every time. It's like, hold on. Let's wait until we actually beat Northwest. Like, let me talk some things. Let me have some fun. Let me envision what a Halloween game with two. Like, the potential for the best game in program history, I'm not allowed to just, like, envision it. Like, that's what makes college football fun, is being able to think about
it. The players cannot do that. That would be very disappointing. And obviously, I mean, Michigan App State obviously comes to mind.
I disagree with you. I want them thinking about how special that game will be if they can head into that game on October 30th undefeated. I want them thinking about that and use that as motivation to beat the brakes off of Northwestern. Okay. Think about how cool that would be. Like, if you're not thinking of like how cool it would be an undefeated game, like two undefeated Ohio State and Michigan heading into a game to, for a chance to go to Big Ten, like that's what you dream of. That's why you go to the school to play those big, big games. And you get there, of course, by focusing on each opponent. You do that week by week. But if that's not in the back of your head, then why are you there? You want to be in the spotlight. Like, you want to be in those big games. And of course, doing the things week by week will get you there. But I don't know, man. I think it's I'm with you. It's the most ridiculous thing. And he says, and this is, if anyone's on the podcast, it's Venice Blue Dev in the YouTube chat. Yeah, because you look dumb talking undefeated and then we lose. Yeah, okay. Again, me talking about it, I'm not looking dumb. I'm saying I hope that we can get to that. Of course, it might happen. Michigan could lose to Northwestern because I didn't think Northwestern had any shot at beating Nebraska. It could happen.
Right.
Me talking about it doesn't do anything. I can talk about whatever. And Blue Dev, you can talk about how stupid I am, and I can't stop you. So you can't stop me. And we're going to fight. So me versus Venice Blue Dev, we're going to meet and we're going to duke it out. And time and place. Let's go. No, I'm just kidding. But
like, this is what we do. We look ahead. We already talked Northwestern. We mentioned that the players are not going to overlook Northwestern. Like, it is what it is. They still have to win the game. And like you said, it'd be very cool. for Michigan State to meet up undefeated. That's what we expect to happen. Michigan is 3 touchdown favorites against Northwestern. Has bigger upsets happened in the past? Yes. But, I mean, what can you do? You know, there's nothing we can do about, and Steven's probably going to be breaking down film here this week. Maybe he'll give you some love, you know, on Northwestern and breaking down their film if that's what, you know, you want to do. Maybe in case they want you to suit up, go play linebacker or something like that. But, you know, we're going to talk about Northwestern. We're going to talk about Michigan State. I mean, we could talk about the fact that the remaining part of the remaining schedule is absolutely brutal. This has been a great season up to this point, but I mean, you look at Michigan State, Penn State, still Maryland is a scary team. Indiana played Michigan State tough. Ohio State, this is going to be a wild, wild end of the schedule. And we can go ahead and look ahead to that.
It's got to be whoever scheduled this season, they have to be just patting themselves on the back, because when you have Ohio State still with Michigan State, you have all the top 4 teams that are still in the big, or still in the top 10 right now in the East to play each other. I don't know if they have the crystal ball to do that. I mean, in terms of ratings, man, these games are going to absolutely dominate. Because
imagine being Fox right now, knowing you've got first pick of the Big Ten rights.
They're Scrooge McDucking their way through the rest of the season. They're just swimming through dollars. It's crazy. So,
and we've got all these 4-hour broadcasts to look forward to.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be funny. Because I don't see the only scenario I see is one of these teams dramatically falls apart. Could be Michigan or Michigan State or even Penn State, where they just lose to all of the 3 other teams. You could have a scenario where it's Michigan, Ohio State meet at the end of the year undefeated. I honestly don't even know what the future looks like. Have they announced what Penn State's quarterback Clifford, his injury status?
I haven't heard anything on Sean.
It's been super quiet. Yeah, it's been super quiet. So,
I will say, his backup in the Iowa game was maybe one of the worst Power 5 quarterbacks I've ever seen in my life. And it was a tough situation.
Yeah.
But my God, was it bad.
Yeah, it's a scary situation, but yeah, not great. So, that's another thing where it's if Clifford isn't back, that's the weakest top 10 team still.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You could, again, it's kind of looking at Nebraska and Rutgers this week. You could tell me any one of these scenarios I'm kind of talking about, of one team winning out, another one losing all 3 of those main matchups, and I would believe any one of those things at this point. You could tell, maybe the only thing I wouldn't believe is Ohio State losing against all the other 3 top 10 teams at this point. But it's shaping up to be probably one of more exciting Big Ten East races in the second half of a season that I can remember. But yeah, we'll see, man. I'm excited for it, and I am interested to see what happens in the Big Ten West now, because I think, like I said earlier, Iowa isn't the number 2 team in the country, but they're just kind of beating up on each other. Everyone's 3-3 or 4 yeah. and 2. Minnesota is sneakily, I think, right now, 2nd in the Big Ten West. Is that right? There's just no direction there. So it's maybe Purdue. It's going to be a weird finish to the Big Ten for both the divisions. It's really odd.
So Iowa is still 3-1 over there. Minnesota's 2-1. Purdue is 2-1. Northwestern is 1-2. Wisconsin's 1-2. Illinois 1-3. And Nebraska 1-4. To your point, Scott Frost, I mean, I don't know how he survives this season, to be quite honest with you. You had Adrian Martinez returning. You had all the expectations. I think the nail might be in the coffin for Scott Frost down in Lincoln.
Yeah, I don't know how you come back from that, because they really had one of the roughest schedules this year, right? And when your crossover games are Michigan State, Michigan, and Ohio State, you're looking at just a gauntlet of a schedule overall. And then you have at Oklahoma early on in the season as well. It's just they weren't set up well to be – getting bowl eligible would be a pretty solid season for them with that kind of schedule. But then they drop a game to start the season against Illinois, and that's one you just can't lose. And then against another middling team at Minnesota. And it's just like those two games, man, if he won those games, then they'd be like 4-3 right now instead of, or like at least 4-5, 5-3 probably. And it's just like, I don't see how he survives. I just don't, because he just hasn't shown improvement, and he's made games really interesting, but he just hasn't been able to close it. And I don't really have sympathy for him, but I have some sympathy for Nebraska fans, even though they are super annoying on Twitter. But again, Twitter people aren't like real life people, because right. they're just lizards or something.
Except
I don't
for maybe
know.
except for maybe the Tennessee fans.
That's fair. And oh my gosh, did you see the end of that game? Just as like a brief aside from Big Ten
talk here. Joe, what are you doing, man?
For anyone who didn't watch that game, which it was a wild ending with trash being thrown on the field from a bunch of fans, and it ended with where were they? Probably like 25-yard line or so.
Yeah, like within striking distance.
Yeah, last like 3 seconds on the play, Joe Milton just kind of scrambles around with a 3-man rush. Didn't really have to scramble, and then he just runs out of bounds at like the 10-yard line to end the game. And it's just like, just one of those situations where you just kind of feel for the guy, but also like, where's the awareness? Yeah, man, I felt like sad, but then like when I saw the offseason articles about Joe Milton and like people were really excited about him winning the job and stuff, and all Michigan fans were like, we've been there, man. We were there. I know how you feel. So it's what makes college football what it is, because that like, for it.
I just wanted to go back to this comment here from Anthony Smela. Sorry if I butchered that, buddy. He said, I was in Nebraska for Russell Bellamy. We know bad backup QB play. So I was watching that Penn State-Iowa game and was texting with Anthony and Chris. And Chris brought the Bellamy game up. And I didn't realize it at the point until he said it, that I had blocked that out of my memory. Like completely, because I was so mad that they didn't give Devin Gardner a shot. I don't care if Devin Gardner didn't play quarterback all year. He can run. He can still throw a football. I don't even care if he knew the plays. Let him run around a little bit and throw it. Like, it would have been no worse than that Russell Bellamy game. It was that was the perfect. I feel like that Penn State backup in the Iowa game was exactly like Russell Bellamy against Nebraska.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, wow, that's the best second guy at like a major program. Like no offense to these guys, right? Because they're better athletes than 99% of people out there. But like at a major program like that, that is making millions upon millions of dollars, like there couldn't be one guy like that. And I do understand that they lost, Penn State lost their one of their quarterbacks to somewhere else. I forget where he transferred. So that's a big, big thing. Yeah. But like, but man, yeah, it's rough. And I know like the away.
Was, didn't he go to Baylor maybe?
That was might it be Baylor, right.
The guy who came in for McSorley in the 2018 game, right? And he was like a big 4- or 5-star kid.
Sounds right. I can't remember, honestly.
Kentucky? Okay, Lewis Blake says Kentucky.
Okay, that does sound right. Because I remember watching him like last week or something. And yeah, man, it's exactly like that Russell Bellamy thing. And it's funny because I feel like, and I'll only bring this up briefly because I know it's been Will Levis. That's his name. Yep. Thank you, Lewis.
Oh, Will Levis, the dude who, have you seen his like TikTok and the things he eats and stuff? It is a nightmare.
I am not on TikTok. I would lose all of my time on that app. But
I've seen it on Twitter because I know some Kentucky fans that I follow, and they tweeted out and they are appalled at some of the stuff.
What is he eating? What does he do?
It's I'd have to go find it. I think he put like I think he puts like mayo in his coffee.
Okay.
Instead of creamer, you know.
I'm out. Yeah. Shark Tank. Like... I'm out. Nope. Not buying any stock in Will Levis. Nope. Sorry. But no, I was gonna bring this up. I don't want to talk about it too much, but like the Russell Bellamy situation was like, when you see that, your initial reaction, and same with like Sean Clifford and Penn State right now, is like, okay, we understand now why Sean Clifford is starting. Even if he starts to look shaky, we know that if we don't have Sean Clifford, the world is going to end. And it's funny because I feel like Michigan fans have kind of felt that at certain points where the starter has been like, is this the best that we have right now? Like, is the backup not better than this? And we felt that.
By the way, Dylan McCaffrey has more interceptions than touchdowns at Northern Colorado right now. So
yeah, not great. And, but it's funny because now we have this scenario where like Cade McNamara is a top five quarterback in the conference, I think pretty comfortably. I think you could argue he's higher than that, but, and now the argument is still a lot of people do want to see McCarthy, but now it's like, because our ceiling is like winning a championship instead of like, is Cade McNamara the best, you know, best we can do? Like he's awful. No, it's just people where it's like the ceiling could potentially be higher with McCarthy. So it's funny, like how different the scenarios can be, but how the back of a quarterback is still
talked about. The narrative would be the other way too, right? Like if the ceiling was 8-4 on this team, people would be like, get McCarthy in there and get him reps so we can start building for the future. Like,
that's true.
There was no way the fans weren't calling for JJ McCarthy this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of back to the Tom Brady, is this the best guy? We just have a 5-star freshman to come in and he should take over. It's like time's a flat circle, man. It'll repeat itself when you see the hot 5-star coming in. Lewis Blake, unfortunately, I was one of those people that wanted to see John O'Korn. Lots of people were there. I was there.
Hey, man, you were not alone.
Dude, I was there at the Purdue game when John O'Korn came in and just like saved the game. Like he had a phenomenal performance. I was there and people were like, who is this guy? I'm like, I don't know, but like, let's keep it going. And it's what makes college football great. I think like, that's a thing that like, I think this year especially has brought up just like how unpredictable it is where a team can beat Northwestern 56-7, play Michigan very, very close, lose by 3, and then turn around and lose to Minnesota. It's like, who is this? And then that same Northwestern team can make Rutgers look horrible and the rest of the season just look like a doormat in the conference. It's just like, I'm going to stop making predictions now because like, it's also the reason that makes college football great is the reason I will never bet on college football because you tell me to put money on the Northwestern game this past weekend, I'm losing a lot of money. Because like how confident I was that Northwestern would not have pulled out that game against Rutgers. It's just like it's unbelievable how variant like the entire sport is.
I thought I had such an easy cover on Georgia and then Mark Stoops calls timeout with like 1 second left of the one. I mean, that's just gambling for you, I guess. But I mean, wild. Yeah, like you said, yeah, college football, man. I do want to pivot though real quick here as we're getting a little bit later in the show. Let's take a look at the AP rankings that just dropped for the basketball team coming in at number 6 on the year of preseason. I'm going to be honest with you, man, and this was a little bit lower than I expected Michigan to be coming in. Like I know it's great to be top 10, but hey, man, number 1 recruiting class in the country. You've got Hunter Dickinson coming back. You've got Devontae Jones coming over, who I think is going to be fantastic. Like, I get it. You lost a top 10 pick in Franz Wagner. Isaiah Livers, who went to the Pistons. But there's Eli Brooks is returning. You've got experience in the number 1 class in the country. I was a little bit surprised by this. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, top 6 felt a little low. I thought it was for sure top 5. I was predicting, like, probably number 3 behind Gonzaga and UCLA. But, yeah, man, when you have – what I think it's like 2 of Michigan's top 3 recruits ever are from this class in Caleb Houston and Musa Diabate. And it's like, they're getting talked up, right? They had a media day where everyone was asking about like the freshman. Diabate sounds like a guy who's going to contribute heavily. I mean, I think we knew both Houston and Diabate were going to do that. You mentioned Devontae Jones, which people have like, I forget where the tweet was, but said like, point guard play is going to be improved dramatically from last year. And last year was really good point guard play, like not a trouble spot at all for this team. So to hear that, and then you bring back some veterans in Eli Brooks, Dickinson's gonna, you know, he seems like he went through quite a bit of transformation through the weight room. And I mean, there's so many pieces there, and you have guys like Johns, who's now a veteran who could, you know, conceivably take a step up. Williams, I think another guy who is poised to kind of take an elevated role, expand his game a little bit. So you have, I don't want to call it like fallbacks, but when you have a guy like Terrence Williams, who is almost like a fallback guy, who's like an experienced, you know, like sixth or seventh guy who most teams would expect to like fill roles as a starter. But because you have just five-star talent rolling in, it's a team that has a lot of depth now and a lot of pieces to, you just have a lot of configurations that you could see working. So yeah, at number six, I'm fine with, because I mean, last year Michigan walked in, I think, unranked, and it was like, really, you're not going to rank Michigan heading into last season?
Yeah,
so like,
right.
It's always a thing where like polls will figure themselves out, I think, much quicker in basketball than football, just because of the number of games. But yeah, I don't know what people are looking at, where it's like, just on paper, it's one of Michigan's most, I don't know, salvaging's the wrong word, tantalizing. I don't know the word for it, but it's a damn good roster. I'll stick with that. But
if these young guys can come up to speed quick, like it's going to be a problem. You know, like one thing I will say, though, I am interested to see what shooting's going to look like this year. Obviously, you lost Isaiah Livers. I think he was top three-point shooting guy in the Big Ten a year ago. Franz shot it at a good clip. Obviously, Mike Smith shot it at a good clip throughout the regular season. I know Devontae Jones, bit more of a slasher, you know. I think he can shoot it a little bit from out there. I know you did a video on him. Was he sub 40% from deep, though?
He had a bit of a variant in his career stats. I'm pulling them up right now. He did shoot close to 30. He was at like 37% from 3-point range his most previous season. So he's a guy who can shoot it. He did have like his 2019-2020 season, he was closer to 30%, but he was like a high usage guy overall. So like he can shoot the rock. I think the defense he brings especially is going to match that of like Eli Brooks. You add like some more strength of Hunter Dickinson, and like, it's going to be a team where I think defense is really going to be the focus.
Yeah.
And that is going to be like the kind of X factor for this team. Where are those true freshmen at in terms of their defense and fitting in to that culture? It seems like Michigan is putting a focus on that from media day. They're like, I think they understand that. And to your point, shooting is probably the second X factor, because you can't just replace a Franz Wagner and Isaiah Livers. Houston does come in with that ability to shoot the ball. And
man, watched him in Worlds, and that dude is a stretch four, stretch five, like to the max.
Yeah. So you're going to have shooters. You're going to have a lot of firepower down low. And it is a case where like, you look at Giabate and Dickinson and you're like, man, I don't know what other program has two guys that can cover them on the floor and match that athleticism and just the strength. Cause like Dickinson's obviously more traditional five, but like you have two big guys right there at 7 foot, you know, Giabate, I think is 6'11" or something. And there's just not a lot of guys, not a lot of two men that can cover those, let alone like in the country, let alone on the same team. So yeah, I think those freshmen is what take the program from a like, you know, top three in the conference to like a team that should probably have like Final Four expectations. Like if they realize their potential, that they seem like they could be one and dones, and I think that's probably based on their ranking what people are expecting them to be, then I don't know how you look at that and say, yeah, that's not a top five team. So I don't know. It'll be fun to watch, and it's going to be really, really crowded in terms of Michigan sports heading into November, because you got hockey, who just earned the number one.
Yeah, they're number one right now too. So you got hockey number one, football number six, and basketball number six right now.
Yeah, man, I can't remember the last time that all three of those programs were as loaded right now. I would go ahead and bet that this is probably the most loaded, or just like in terms of perception right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%.
Football, you could argue, you know, they're not as loaded as, you know, but like the combination of all three, hockey has the most draft picks that a program has ever had. Basketball is coming off obviously a great season, and, you know, I think Elite Eight expectations, at least top two in the conference and Final Four for a lot of people. And then football steals everything in front of them undefeated. So it's like, it's going to be a Michigan fan, man. Like,
on the football side of things, I'm still not quite to the point where I expect them to compete for a national championship. Obviously, there's a scenario in which that still happens here this year. But for basketball and hockey, these are two teams I very much expect to compete for a national championship here this year. I think Michigan hockey, I mean, they got three legit NHL players on their squad. Like,
Michigan is
an odds-on favorite to win a national championship here this year in hockey.
Yeah. You know? If you're ranking like expectations of like a national title, Michigan is like, they should win a national title with that level.
They actually like just should win.
Seriously. Like, yeah, they are expected to this year without a doubt. Basketball is like, they're on the next level where like, if they are not in the Final Four, I think a lot of people will be like, man, that was a lot of talent. They should have done better.
Yeah. This is probably the first year for basketball I've come in like with these expectations. Even 2013, it was exciting with the, you know, what did they call themselves, man? The Fresh Five that were coming in. McGarry and Robinson and Spike and all those guys. I'm trying to remember. What did they call themselves? Like, I can't even remember.
I was so deep into my engineering classes at that point. I feel like my mind was mush whenever I heard that.
They were exciting when we came in, but it still wasn't like, I think this team is going to compete for a national championship. And then as the season got going, they were undefeated, eventually got ranked number one. And that's where the turn happened, where you're like, yeah, this team is talented enough, especially with the level Trey Burke was playing at, that they could win a national championship. But for this like Michigan basketball team, they should at least compete for, obviously the tournament is a crapshoot, but it's at least make it to the second weekend, probably at least make it to the Elite Eight. And this team should be top two Big Ten, like you said, and probably compete for a national championship.
Yeah. And it is, I mean, Mike Smith was an X factor where it was like, what is he going to come in and bring this previous season? Obviously he filled a very needed role. You are still pretty light at the point guard position. Zeb Jackson obviously is expected to take,
and to see what Frankie Collins can do too, man.
That's another guy. Yeah, I really like his game. And it's crazy because we haven't even brought up Kobe Bufkin, who's like, quietly one of my favorite guys from the class. So it's, again, when you go back to like a lot of programs would need a guy like that to be filling the gap. And I think Michigan State could argue is kind of in that position where they need some guys to fill some roles there that are, not a potential one and done. I know they got Christie, who's a really solid freshman for them. Yeah. But anyway, I love how Michigan has set up themselves to be like, they can get the big guys with Juwan Howard, with Hunter Dickinson's development. They're going to be able to get the big guys that they want. And then they've established a good way to use the transfer portal for some high powered point guards to come in. And it's a case where it's really hard probably to get a really, really solid big man or have those guys from a smaller program. You just don't see guys that are, you know, super athletic 7-footers that are going to come from a smaller conference. Those guys usually just don't exist. And that size will usually get someone at least at a relatively major program. And there's just less of those guys. There's a lot of point guards that can come from mid-majors that can become veterans very quickly at a high level program. There's just a lot more 6'2" guys playing basketball in the world than the 7-footers. So I just love how they've structured that to fill the gaps that they, you know, they're leveraging the transfer portal for those bodies and leveraging the head coach's experience, leveraging a guy like Hunter Dickinson that you can point to really well. You have the Wagner, you have Franz Wagner back in the day. You have a lot of big guys that I think Michigan has done well with, but especially with Juwan Howard, that's going to be like the bread and butter of recruiting, where the, again, those guys just don't grow on trees. So it's just a thing where Michigan is kind of in the Ohio State football scenario where they had a really good thing going with Beilein. You bring in a guy who's an ace recruiter, able to continue carrying the torch, and then they've molded themselves really well to leveraging the new aspects like the portal and things like that to really turn themselves into like the Villanova model, where you can attract the five-star talents, but then you have your foundational guys that'll stick around a couple of years. So yeah, man, I don't know which team I'm most excited for in the next couple of months, but my DVR is going to get a lot of activity, saving games to go back and watch throughout the rest of the season. And I have like a calendar that I put all the games on, and there's like overlap with hockey and basketball. I'm just gonna be like, my mind's gonna explode. I don't have enough eyes. Like I don't know how to focus on all these different things that are happening. So,
and man, I just kind of, you know, I've been thinking about it a little bit, but you just kind of got my wheels turning in just the way that the roster's, you know, built. And think of how many ways they can beat you. They can go big. Caleb Houston's shooting ability allows you to play potentially Hunter Dickinson, Caleb Houston, and Musa Diabate out there at the same time with a couple of guards. But they can also go very small on you, where you've got Terrence Williams and Brandon Johns playing the 4 and 5, maybe Devontae Jones, Eli Brooks, and another shooter like Collins, or you know, or Bufkin, or Zeb Jackson. Like, there's so many ways that they can put together a lineup out on the court to counter whatever it is that you're doing. It's going to make things so difficult on so many teams.
Yeah. Yeah. It's truly like having the depth that Michigan has. That's the big reason that I think most Michigan fans should feel comfortable with those expectations. Because you know that you'll need someone to step up in one of these games. I think we saw it a lot last year, where if Franz Wagner wasn't having a good game, Isaiah Livers could step up. Mike Smith had the ability to take over a game. He did that a lot at Columbia before his time at Michigan, and he did have a couple games where he had to do that. And I feel like in Michigan teams in the past, if Livers wasn't producing, wasn't a whole lot else generating the offense. Last year was not the case, where you could turn to most guys. And I'm going to use a weird reference here, but you know how, like, it's going to be super weird, don't laugh at me, but you know how like major, like any sort of accident for like an airplane or something, it takes multiple factors, multiple like engine failure, tail failure, all these different things lining up for it to finally crash and finally just like put together a bad game. And I feel like that was the game against UCLA last year.
Spoken like a true engineer, by the way.
Seriously, it's like, it's just usually when one thing isn't working, right? Like Dickinson just isn't on his game, someone else will be able to step up. And that was the case last year. That's why you win a bunch of games, because you can turn to option B, option C, D, and you can still get a win. And that's now what it feels like for this team. You have a reasonable option E, who's still a really, really good player, and it takes A, B, C, D, and E to all fail to lose. And this year, it feels like there's even more of those options to avoid an airplane crash, which is the weirdest analogy I think I've ever made on any sort of video or podcast, but that's kind of what goes through my head.
No, it makes sense though. Like it is a good analogy. It's just not one you hear too often.
Yeah.
real quick. Lewis Blake. Yes. Is this Coach K's last year? Yes. He's going to be doing the whole, you know, the final tour, and he's going to get gifts like Jeter, you know, that whole thing.
Why is this a thing? And we can end the show on this. I like, even with Ed Orgeron, right, at LSU, it's like, this is going to be his final year. Like, why is this a thing where they just do like a full season in like Coach K's, you know, scenario? They announced that a while ago.
Long time ago. I like Roy Williams, man, who's just like, nah, I ain't coming back.
Yeah. And it's just like, I don't understand this sort of like victory lap sort of deal. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm in the minority there, but it just seems super odd to me to, I guess it's probably good for the program, right? If you know that it's the last year, then the coach can kind of prep for the for the next thing. It gives recruits a lot of time to, like, you know, have that sort of transition ahead of time. So I guess I'm talking myself into reasons that it can be helpful from an administrative standpoint. But I guess selfishly from, like, a fan standpoint, it's just like, all right, you're gone. Like, I don't know. It just seems weird. Like, I don't, like, these guys make enough money to where I don't feel they need the victory lap. Maybe I'm just heartless. I think that's probably the solution, or that's the conclusion I'm coming here, is just I just think these guys should just, like, retire and just enjoy yourself, and you don't need the victory lap to enjoy yourself. But, you know, those guys had quite a career. So, you know what, if they want to get celebrated a little bit more TV time, you know, maybe they deserve that. So
you would,
there you go.
You just want everyone to be like Draymond treating Paul Pierce, you know?
That's it, man. That's it. Lewis Blake says you're jelly, as in I'm jealous. Yeah, man. Here's the thing. When I'm going to be done making videos, whatever that is down the line, I'm going to announce it 10 years in advance. And then for each year, I'm just going to have a countdown on the top of my videos. And you guys can all just celebrate each and every year just so I can have my victory laps.
Like, at the end of the day, too, it's going to be like a distraction kind of for the Duke player suits. Everywhere you go, there's going to be, you know, like, gifts in a pregame ceremony when it's his last time playing there. You just – it's going to be that way. I don't know how good Duke's going to be this year anyway, so maybe it's a good year to do it. But, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us here today anyway. I think we hit on everything we planned to touch on. Appreciate everyone here in the YouTube watching it live, as we do every Monday night at 7:30. You guys are fantastic. We really appreciate you guys keeping everything going in the comments, giving us something to talk about. Appreciate your feedback. And always a lot of fun for those listening on the podcast. If you enjoy doing it that way, by all means, please do. You can join us, though, every Monday night at 7:30 on the Maize and Brew YouTube channel. Subscribe, rate, leave a review on the podcast, as well as subscribe to the channel. Steven, where can we find you on social media? What you got going on this week, man?
Yeah, you can find me at Steven Toski on Twitter. Going to be picking back up analysis of the Nebraska. Sorry, you interrupted by showing the emoji I found. It looks like a guy dabbing, you know, like Jay Chesson dabbing. It's called elbow cough. I thought it was really funny just looking through that. So if you're on YouTube, look up the emoji elbow cough. And it reminded me of J.U. Chesson doing the dab after all of his touchdowns. But anyway, yeah, as Steven Toski on Twitter, I'm going to be looking back on the previous game for offensive analysis. I had defense analysis on the YouTube channel. YouTube channel hit 5,000 subscribers this weekend, which is phenomenal.
Let's go.
Yeah, I appreciate all you guys' support. Yeah, it means a lot to get it to that mile marker. It was always a big goal to get it there. So appreciate you all for doing that. Feel free to check out the channel if you're interested in becoming a member, early access, custom badges. That's the sort of thing
you can do. Like Lewis Blake here, you get the cool logo next to you.
You do. And, if you just like supporting the channel, head over to the Maize and Brew YouTube channel and press the join button there. But yeah, otherwise, ask Steven Toski. I'll be posting some plays, hopefully, for analysis this week. And yeah, we'll go from there.
You can find me on Twitter at Luke Ghiardi, LukeGhiardi. Again, subscribe, rate, leave a review, man. We love to get the feedback. Love to have you guys in the comments on the YouTube show every Monday night at 7:30. Whole lot of fun. And looking forward to doing it again next week. Hopefully talking about a win against Northwestern. And looking ahead to hopefully a match of undefeateds in East Lansing the following week. So we'll see you next week. For Steven Ostatowski, I'm Luke Ghiardi. We'll see you then on Brewcast.